Saw, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. Hostel, the Hills Have Eyes remake. The Strangers, I Spit on Your Grave, and The Last House on the Left remake. All movies released within a few years of each other. We're going to review one of them. Is it the worst of them? Find out right now on Loathsome Things, a horror movie podcast with Josh, that's me, and John, that's him.
Hey yo, welcome to a terrible movie. God damn it. And this is not the movie I thought it was.
It's chock full of actors that make you go, I think I've seen them in something else.
Oh man, it was made for direct to TV. Test audiences liked it, and so they just went ahead and threw it in the theaters.
Yeah, what could go wrong?
What could go wrong with a zero budget movie that was just terrible?
Yeah.
God damn it. It was so bad. The effects were great, but the movie was terrible.
Yeah, that one effect was great.
Yeah, one effect was... Couple effects at the end were pretty cool. The rest of the movie sucked balls.
The director is Denis Iliadis. It's the Iliad. He's Greek.
Yeah, Denis Kalaitis.
Yes. He's some director with kind of a passion for lesbians, you might say.
Yeah.
Will that translate into this movie? It turns out, beyond one joke at the beginning, no. Surprisingly.
Not at all.
Yeah. It's like, oh, the guy who's just really into lesbians just went ahead and didn't put that scene in this movie. You know what? Good. Yeah, that was good choice. Good one, Dennis.
Way to go, Dennis. Way to remake a movie that sucked to begin with and really didn't need to be remade.
75% of what makes this movie interesting is comparing it to the original and the movie that inspired the original. And beyond that, there's not really much here. There's nothing of interest for the viewer to watch unless they're specifically watching it to compare to the Wes Craven film.
It's just, you know, less audacious, less ballsy, I guess, less peculiar, less interesting, less relevant, and yet let's go ahead and remake it anyway.
I will say it did make me appreciate the original a bit more. Not that the original is good, but the original was at least, like, interesting, and, like, there was something to talk about there. Here, there's not really much to talk about, except for the actors. There's, it's just Aaron Pinkman. Aaron Jesse the Bitch Pinkman. Aaron Paul.
Tony Goldwyn, he's been in a lot of things, but, you know, small guy. It's like small actor, not a small guy.
A.K.A. not Rick Grimes.
Yeah. Monica Potter, she's been in things, like Saw.
She was in Saw, yeah.
So, that's great. Garrett Dillahunt was in Deadwood. No Country for Old Men, but, you know, it's not like he was in memorable.
I only remembered him from a TV show called Raising Hope, where he plays a very young grandpa who is still kind of like a pothead, and it's a very silly, like, My Name is Earl era sitcom. And so seeing him here as a murder rapist was kind of wild and not great.
No, his dyed black everything was very strange. His Ming the Merciless goatee was really distracting.
He's like, I just can't grow hair right here. Like, my sideburn ends here, and then a little ways down, there's my beard.
Plus, check out my giant carpenter pants. Who else is in this movie? Nobody.
Sarah Paxton, Bill Paxton's seventh cousin.
Is that true? Jeez. She was she was weird looking. And then there was Martha Makisak, who played Paige.
Yeah.
And who really has no business acting.
Yeah, she was in Superbad, and she wasn't...
No, she was okay in that, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, she was kind of fun in Superbad, but she was terrible in this.
Yeah, and her character was terrible, too. Like, they were like, hey, you know what would be good if we took the Phyllis character and just made her just the worst?
just made her... just made her the worst. In fact, made her so bad that she didn't need to be there.
Yeah, what if she wasn't there? This movie could have kept going. And this movie is just, oh my God, it's not good. It's not good.
It's not good. And, you know, we'll get into it at the end. I'll save that. But yeah, it's not good. It's not good. It's, as far as a threequel selections, this was probably our worst one. Virgin Spring is a great film, you know, as is the original Body Snatchers. The you know, the Ferrara remake was pretty good, so on and so forth. Like, Carrie obviously was great, the original. Wes Craven's movie we already panned deeply, and we're about to rip this one pretty bad too. And if this movie, let's say this movie was just a standalone movie, it wouldn't even be worth watching, you know. Like, it's as it is, it's barely worth watching, even for our purposes.
It makes some interesting choices, but without the original being there, this movie serves no purpose.
It was like a Lifetime movie, plus a little bit of fancy gore at the end. That was about it.
Yeah, some unbelievable stabbing and
some extraneous boobage.
Yeah, boobs that didn't need to be there. Some business with a shower curtain rod that didn't. Okay.
Lots of butts and
yeah,
and that and that's about it. And so some mediocre performances, including a piss poor performance by Aaron Paul. He's terrible in this movie.
Yeah. This was around the first year of Breaking Bad, and this was no.
He's lucky he got that gig or kept it after this. Jesus.
Yeah, they were originally gonna kill him off in season one, and then they're like, you know what? We like this Pinkman guy, so you know.
He says bitch.
We'll give
really
this guy
well.
A whole career. all right, let's dive into it.
Yeah, so anyways, the movie opens. We've got a little credit sequence, some creepy woods, yay. Creepy music, sort of. Not really. We cut to a car with a couple cops in it and some douche who looks like Ming the Merciless with a bad black-haired wig on. And they are transporting this guy. He's a criminal. And they get stopped at a train crossing. And while they're sitting there telling really bad jokes, they get completely broadsided by a car that no one saw coming until it hit them. A big yellow pickup truck. Out hops a ninja and the Punisher. the ninja shoots the driver in the head and kills him. They spring out Ming the Merciless. And then Francis, who is Aaron Paul, fucks the surviving cop a little bit more, takes his cash, and then force murders his neck to death on the side of the car. Or it was stupid, whatever. We cut to a dreamy in-pool scene with a girl floating in the pool with someone swimming laps. It's Mary! Hey! She's swimmy, and her mom is there to provide moral support and look like the lady that was in Lost. Kind of look like her. I'm not sure if it was her. We cut to the dad, Tony Goldwyn, who is a surgeon working at a hospital. Mom shows up, picks him up, cut to them all driving to their vacation house with everything that Mary has ever owned in her entire life stuffed in the back of their wagon. They drive through some beautiful scenic woods, and we find out that Mom's loser brother had previously stayed there, but he was kind enough to leave them some $4 champagne. Mary heads to the boat shed, because she does, And it's idyllic, and as she watches some people boat by, she strips down to her underwear and goes for a wee swim, and then we perv watch her as she showers for no reason whatsoever. Well, she showers for a reason. We don't perv watch her for any reason other than to be pervs. What were you saying?
Yeah, just a big long shot where the center of the camera is on her crotch panties while she like contemplates her body sexually in the mirror, and it then zooms in on the sweat glistening upon her chest.
And we play Connect-A-Mole for like 10 minutes. And yeah. It doesn't need to be there. It's gratuitous and stupid. Okay, that's good. That's a way to set things up. Mary wants to go, she wants to take the car and go party with her friend Paige. Her mom's not into it. Her dad, however, is completely sold when Mary says, "You guys can have a fun evening alone by yourselves." And dad throws her the keys and says, have fun. He gives her... Yeah. I would describe as a drug dealer's wad of cash, and she bails. We hear very shitty TV music as she meets up with her friend Paige, who works in a convenience store in a weird vacation town. Okay, great.
Yeah.
They talk weed, mainly Paige, who wants weed, and Mary, who doesn't want weed. And they're being snooped on by a dead-eyed creepy person wearing a hoodie. This is where I took a little quick break and wrote, "I hate this movie so far." He invites them back to his hotel to get some, quote, premium A-grade shit after he pulls out his money to pay Paige for his shit at the store. He hides a bloody 20, buys his shit. We cut to Paige entering his slum hotel while Mary waits in the Tahoe. That's right. It's a Chevy Tahoe, not a station wagon. I'm an idiot. The most terrifying cleaning lady on the planet jump scares Mary so bad that she gets out of the car and heads into the hotel room, steps over a newspaper showing the bad guys on the front cover. And inside, Paige is smoking out with Justin, just having a grand old time. She convinces Mary to smoke with them. And then fields an annoying call from her mother. The phone is cutting out, and she wants to stay the night with Paige, but mom's not into it. And then she does that, "I can't hear you, I guess it's breaking up, I'll see you tomorrow." And then mom freaks out and nags dad, and then dad doesn't do anything, and then she breaks out the wine. Back at the hotel, they have more hotel weed. There's bed jumping, sad stories about lost people in families that no one cares about.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't. And I hate Paige. Then they fuck around and do dumb shit. It's boring. And then, thank God, the uncle and the father will arrive with Sadie in tow, who looks like a pencil. And she immediately gets topless. Krug immediately becomes a dick. Francis was always a dick. And so on and so forth. Krug ends up gut-punching Justin just because, announces that they've been outed in the newspaper, and it begins. The knife comes out, Francis is grabby, Paige locks herself in the bathroom, bangs on the window as a cop drives by and doesn't hear anything. Francis breaks in, falls into the tub for a moment. It's really funny. And then Paige finds herself with her head bashed upon the sink to unconsciousness.
There's an awful lot of tub thumping in this movie. We're gonna keep ending up in the tub.
Hey, oh, Danny boy.
They all load up in the SUV and they drive into the woods, even though we had just been in the desert, like the desert motel. I don't know what's going on. Mary uses the backseat electric cigarette lighter. Was that a thing? Were they like the SUV, you have cigarette lighters in the back seat so that your children can light their cigarettes with fire?
I have seen backseat cigarette lighters, to be fair, I guess.
Yeah, it's fine. It's fine. That was never a good idea. They were like, you know what? They need more cup holders, and we need to give the children access to instant fire.
Another fantastic idea. Use a cigarette lighter to get away from three rapist murderers.
Yeah, well, that's Mary's idea. I'm going to give them the wrong directions and then burn Sadie's face with a cigarette lighter, thus causing a car accident, and everyone's shit is fucked, and she doesn't even make a break for it. But during all of this, who's her face? The other one, Paige, does make a break for it. Everyone's pissed off. There's a prolonged sequence of chasing Paige through the woods, of retrieving her, of having her, taking her top off except for her bra, and then she says a thing, and then there's a prolonged stabbing her sequence, followed by a creative choice, I will say, possibly even a good one, of them... of the Krug then rapes Mary, and instead of, as in the other two movies, where it is a quick thing, this one takes up minutes of screen time. It is massively more brutal than in the other two films, and I appreciate that, actually. Like, I thought that was one of the few good things that this movie did in conversation with the other films, is they made it so that rape doesn't look... quick and easy. It was long, it was brutal, it was painful, it was unpleasant to an extent that the others weren't.
Yeah, that was a tough scene to watch. And, you know, I mean, but you're right. I mean, if there's one thing I do enjoy, it's a long, drawn out rape. But no, you're right. I mean, you're absolutely right. It did exactly what it wanted to do, which was, you know, make you very uncomfortable, and it did so, and it really did not shy away from it.
No,
the guy did have a remarkably well-toned ass, and it didn't make any sense that they just kept focusing on that, but other than that, it was very unsettling.
Yeah, you gotta catch the butt pumping.
Oh god, yeah, that was brutal. But yeah, her screams were pretty rough to hear. I'll admit, that was, yeah, that scene was difficult.
Yeah, one of the most effective scenes in this movie. And get ready for us talking about a very long sequence of ineffective scenes.
Yeah.
This is then followed by, you know, the regularly scheduled milling about post-rape while everyone comes to terms with their feelings. At this point, Mary stands up. She has a rock. She says that she'd like to swim, and then she does a clobber and runs and hits the water, goes super fast. They're shooting at her. They're missing her. She's about to make it around the bend and be out of range, but then they shoot her, and we see her. She's in the water. She's dead. Her blood is going all the fuck over the place really, really fast. Definitely dead, not alive. Mary, dead in the water.
Won't be seeing that maiden anymore in this movie. She's dead. That's for certain.
Yeah, she's dead.
Oh my god. She's dead.
Yeah. Died in the water.
Done.
Yeah.
Moving on from there.
Yeah.
If there's one thing we can agree, okay, I'm sorry.
No, it's
the gang.
She's definitely dead.
Yeah, she's dead. I mean, if we haven't made that part, okay. So the gang heads off with Paige in tow. Cut to the folks back home having dinner with, I don't know, like a delightful rosé. I don't know what the fuck they're drinking. The crew shows up at the door in what is one of the dumbest scenes I've ever seen in my life. They look like the fucking Munsters or like the Addams Family. Like, they're covered in blood, soaked. They're swarthy, creepy looking. They look like horrible people. And they're just like,
we just kind of, can we come in?
And they're like, oh, sure, come on in. Like, what? Who the fuck are these people? Are so stupid. I would never let these people in my house, ever. I mean, it's just insane. They're just, they look, I mean, they look like, all of them look like Simon Legree with like the long mustache and the curl and the, and they're all like, hey, can you let us in? It's like, why the fuck would, okay. Anyways, so yeah. They let him in, you know, because why not? They're great. They're good people. And Dad sets Francis's nose, pops it back into place. Sounds delightful. He starts stitching it up. Krug, or as I spelled it here, Kurg, and Sadie feign not being evil, and really works well, apparently, because the parents are so fucking stupid they don't realize anything. Mom offers to make hot chocolate for Justin, who has somehow suddenly become six. Why the parents are not suspicious at this point, I don't understand. Cue the power going out. Cue Dad leaving to check on it. Cue Mom starting to realize that maybe something's not right, but not being able to put her finger on it. Dad busts out the Jenny, gets her started. We've got limited power in the house. Let's start a fire and tell ghost stories. No, they didn't do that. Dad finishes stitching up Frank's schnoz. Fire's going. Now the phone is out. Great. Dad suggests that the crew spend the night. Hey, why not?
Yeah.
Why not?
Yeah, live here with me and my wife.
Yeah, what possible reason could you have for not having these four extremely disturbing, including one teenager who is clearly dead in his eyes, people stay overnight? That's a great idea. Even Krug is like,
probably shouldn't. We really need to get going. And the dad's like, no, please. I insist. I want all four of you staying in my house.
So they decide to stay. Great move, Dad. Okay, that's fine. Whatever. Justin sees a photo of Mary on the refrigerator door. His head explodes. He manages to put it back together just in time to get ill and lock himself in the bathroom. Krug goes to go check on him. He comes out. He threatens him. In the process, Justin manages to leave Mary's necklace wrapped around a red Solo frat party cup that's in the kitchen. And so that the parents can find it. Mom shows them to the guest room, which is where they will be spending the night, but hides, ironically, Mary's jewelry, her jewelry. And then we see a little bit of Frank fiending on Mom, which is just, it's terrible. He's like, hey,
you know, I just was going to come out and got something to drink, bitch.
And so... that's going on.
It's the worst scene.
It's so bad.
Like, it's just two people really not being good at flirting with each other.
Maybe you would like something stronger.
I think I would, bitch.
How about wine?
I guess it's gonna be wine, bitch.
Are you wine?
It's just like, okay. We go see Mary just to check up on her, and, I guess we were wrong. It turns out she's still alive.
Oh, wow.
Who saw that coming?
Neat.
So the parents hear some clicky-clacking going on outside, and they go out to check. The rocking chair is banging against the wall, and Mary is zonked out on the patio in front of the rocking chair. I don't know. Yeah. She's banging it against the... I don't know what the fuck. So they find her. They realize she's alive. He gets her... He revives her. Pulls a jungle surgery and removes the bullet. Mom sees the necklace in the meantime. So now the stage is set for the rest of this movie to finally fucking finish. Dad does a wound cauterization with a knife tip. More wound care. He cuts a hole in her... through to her lungs so he can drain the juice and allow her to breathe. He puts the tip of the hose into a glass of water so we can see that he's doing doctor-y things. Who fucking cares?
He also checks on her vagina.
Yeah.
He, like, takes a little peekaroo down there.
Just takes a little hello to the hoo-ha. And then Mom comes back, tells him that she found the necklace. Does she find the necklace at that point? No. Yeah, she does. And then they have a hard cry.
Yeah.
And then he tells her that he's seen blood, the rape evidence, great. Back at the guest house, the gang has gone night-night. Dad goes to check on the boat to see if it's usable. Can't find the boat keys, of course. Justin, in the meantime, gets up and sneak grabs Krug's gun. Frank pops in for the cold beer, and that's where we have the whole cold creeping like a phantom part, where she pretends to like him, and she's got knives hiding behind her back, and they play booze flirt, and Mom gets wine from the fridge, hides Mary's photo. Dad, in the meanwhile, is gathering, very carefully gathering the world's most whatever it is he's looking for, tools that could be weapons. Also, this vacation house has more tools in it that it's like, what the fuck? Did they build it with their bare hands or what?
It's awesome.
There's so many tools. He's doing the, this one? Or, oh, what about this one? Like, okay. You know, you can pick more than one, dude. So, yeah, Dad's doing the whole tool thing. And then Frank suggests in the meantime that he saw that they had a hot tub. Maybe they should go out in the hot tub in a total fucking downpour. Mom votes the hot tub down and says, maybe let's go fireplace and chill. And in the meantime, Frank steps out of the kitchen. And of course, he sees Mary because she's right fucking there. Mom smashes him over the head with the wine bottle and stabs him in the chest. Great. Dad arrives and fights Frank because he's only been smashed over the head with a bottle and stabbed in the chest, so he's clearly up for fighting. He grabs his nose. They struggle. Mom shoves his head into the dishwater, which is ridiculous. And then they get his arm into the garbage disposal, turn that on, and he goes, bitch! 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 For like, I don't know, it was like 30 minutes, wasn't it?
It was a very long scene.
I didn't think it was going to end, but then it ends because Mom puts the claw hammer claw into his skull. Beautiful.
And his be-ruined fings plop out of the garbage disposal, he all dead on the floor.
His hand that has like two cuts in it. I'm like, wait a minute, you just shoved his hand into a jet rotor. Why does it look like, you know, like he has a paper cut?
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Also, the fact that, like, in the middle of a fight scene, Daddy just, like, pinches the bridge of this guy's nose.
The bridge of his waxen nose.
Why didn't you just punch him in the nose? That's so much more effort.
I guess they just had to draw out the agony of the close-up of him going, bitch!
It's just such a weird, like, wrestling move instead of actually fighting a person.
It's such a Three Stooges move.
I know. Whoop, 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 whoop.
Yeah.
That was the sound of me slapping the top of my head. So then Mom and Dad creep into the guest house. That's where they've all been staying. They have a guest house. And there's this great scene where Justin wants to hand Dad the gun, but he's all the way on the other side of the room. So Dad has to, like, pussyfoot across the room to grab the gun. And then a floorboard does a creaking, and Dad shoots and wings Sadie. Krug jumps out the window. Sadie barricades herself in the bathroom. Dad beats down the door and then beats the shit out of topless Sadie and is just railing on her and destroying her topless, half-alive body until finally Mom walks in and shoots her in the eyeball.
And then she breathes a little bit and then slowly slides to the ground. Boobs akimbo. I don't know.
Boobs akimbo. It's like this. Oh, good. Mom and Mary wait in the boat that they can't turn on while Dad goes into the house to get Krug, I mean, the keys to the boat. They do a prolonged fight where Krug skips several opportunities to kill Dad so that he can say gross things to him instead. Just then, Justin shows up. He's got the gun now. He points it at Krug. They talk. He pulls the trigger, but the gun is empty. And then Krug stabs Justin with the fireplace poker. Now mom shows up. She has a fire extinguisher. She sprays him. She bonks him. Dad clobbers him. Krug on the ground. Everything's great. Everyone's happy. Everyone gets in a boat. Justin's alive. He's fine. He's in the boat too. They're going to the boat hospital. but then all of a sudden we hear a squishy noise. The camera switches and we see a box cutter squish into some flesh. It's morning. Krug is on a table. Dad has surgically paralyzed him from the neck down because he didn't have any rope or duct tape. And then he wheels in the broken microwave oven that was briefly mentioned at the beginning of the movie. Like, how did that gosh darn brother of mine break this microwave oven? Wheels in the microwave oven, puts it around Krug's head, sets it for popcorn, and makes Krug's head explode, movie over.
Jesus Christ. Does a microwave work with the door open?
Well, it is an old one. I think maybe that's what his brother broke on it, was the safety function.
Ah, wow. Who fucking cares? Why even put that in? That's so stupid. I mean, it was pretty awesome because I knew he was, I mean, you know, I knew we were going to see a gruesome death of some sort. I did not expect his head to go all scanners-y.
Yeah. It exploded nose first. It's just like the little nose portion rocketed up.
So let that be a lesson to you folks. If you put your head in a microwave, you got about 8 or 9 seconds before your head pops like a fucking balloon.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell is that? Okay, sure, movie over.
I mean, it was easily my favorite part of the whole movie.
Oh, for sure. My son and I watched this one and laughed our way through it, and then when that part happened, I was like, whoa, nice, and now it's over.
Yeah. It's like, let's go out on a real moral high note.
I mean, you know, seriously, if you're going to remake this movie, you need to pick your battles, and literally, in this case, your battle should be the battles at the end of the movie. And just draw that bitch out. Like, make half the movie, which, by the way, this movie was 2 fucking hours long.
It was so long.
It was way too long. It was 2 hours too long, actually. But,
yeah.
But if you're gonna, like, stretch, if you're gonna, like, put a stamp on the movie, make it be the revenge part, you know? Like, you know, go easy on the rape. We don't need to see 10 minutes of rape. And then we do want to see lots of really disgusting revenge. Like, just go apeshit with it. Have the dad have, like, a, you know, I don't know, a sadistic side or something. Like, that we saw coming. And then we're like, oh, you pissed this guy off? You guys are in big trouble. Instead of this, like, surprise, the surgeon who's sworn to save life killed a guy by putting his head in a microwave and popping it like a meat balloon. Oh my God.
Yeah. It's weird because, like, if you read the, like, 3-sentence long summary of this movie, it sounds fucking badass.
It does.
Like both of them, it's like, oh man, that second half of this movie is going to kick so much ass. And in both instances, the revenge part just sucks. Like, I made that go fast, but that is literally a half hour of movie that I just breezed through. And most of it is just a fight scene between the dad and Krug. And it is boring. Mm-hmm. It is so boring. Have you seen people hit each other with the same fire poker just over and over and over again, and none of it is good? That's this movie.
You hit me. Now you go. Your turn. It's like, yeah. Wow. Okay. This is, oh my God. I love the part where, like, Krug runs upstairs and dad is standing downstairs and he goes, come on down, you piece of shit. Whoa.
Ooh, whoa. Burn.
You want some ice for that burn?
Oh my God.
And so Dennis, he was like, all right, so I'm gonna ditch the humor. Great choice. Yeah. And I'm gonna make the rape scene long and torturous because rape is horrible and I wanna capture that in the movie. I don't wanna like try to sell rape as easier or more pleasant than it actually is. Great choice. And he's like, but the part I'm gonna take out in addition to the humor, I'm also going to take out the Home Alone element. That no one wants to see a Home Alone element in here. That would have kicked so much ass if this was a Home Alone situation, because there was just nothing to hold on to at the end of this movie.
Dad should not have been a surgeon. He should have been a fucking mechanical engineer, and he Rube Goldberg's that bitch right up to the heavens. And it's like 45 minutes of,
what? Like, why does it say drop me with this marble in this cup? And then he drops a marble in the cup, and then the cup is just heavy enough to do this, and that triggers that. And then 15 minutes later, you know, someone's head gets stuck in the microwave and explodes. Like,
yes.
That would have been so much cooler.
Yeah, the whole thing of like, oh, and then they play host and they're going to, like, get their revenge. And then the revenge is just lame.
There's so many missteps in this movie. I mean, never mind the fact that it stylistically feels like a Lifetime movie. It looks like shit. Everything has this blue tint to it, which I found incredibly annoying. I don't know. Whatever. Fuck this movie. If let's say you had to rate this movie on a... And you know, I guess we have to start saying that on a loathsome things scale of 0 to 5 loathsome things, what would you give it?
I gave it a 2.4 out of 5. It's inches above the original, not because it's actually better than the original, it's just slightly less, like, disgustingly reprehensible than the original. Yeah. It's like right there at the like middle of mediocrity, but it's like just below mediocrity, where it's like not mediocrely good, it's mediocrely bad. So that's a 2.4 out of 5 for me. What about yourself, Joel?
I guess that's why I was qualifying that so heavily on the loathsome things scale, because as a loathsome thing, I gave it a higher rating than the first film considerably. I actually gave it a 3.2, which Dango. Is crazy. And the reason why I did that was because I liked the effects. They were minimal, but I liked them. I mean, the exploding head was ridiculous, but it worked. It looked cool.
Yeah.
The production values were okay. You know, whatever. It was definitely a horror movie. I mean, to be fair. The setting was okay. The atmosphere sucked. The writing was not good. Acting was terrible. I didn't really enjoy it that much. But, you know, I mean, to be fair, that was what my rating came out to. If I was gutting it, I'd probably give it like a 2.
Yeah.
But, you know, by actually trying to be somewhat objective, I'll give it a 3.21. I am in no way recommending anybody see this movie, including people who are friends and family of these actors. It's terrible.
For example, Darren Paul, you don't need to watch this movie.
Darren Paul and Griselda Goldwyn.
Yeah.
No reason to sit down and oh, Tony, you're in this one. Let's watch it. No.
Yeah.
No. There's no need to. Just go ahead and jump right ahead to Law and Order.
Yes. Not even SVU. You can skip that one. Just go to the original. No.
Straight to Law and Order, where he plays an attorney.
So that's a 5.6 out of 10 loathsome things. That feels about right. That's good money for what this is.
It's pretty generous, but I guess when you look at it that way, it's pretty much just as average as you can.
Yeah, if you want to make 2 hours of your life be accompanied by a movie that has some moments worth remembering, but overall you can't really remember which movie that was that you saw it in, then this is the movie for you.
If you want to offend your son by making a crack right after Mary gets shot in the water and turn to him and go, well, I guess that's her final swim, then, you know, this is the movie for you. And he was like, Jesus, Dad.
Dad!
Don't watch this movie if you haven't. Just don't.
Yeah, it's not worth it. But yeah, like I said earlier, it's interesting when comparing it to the other two. And beyond that, that's really the only value that it has as a film, is as a comparative conversation piece. The villains are brutal, but they're not interesting. The male gaze is still here. It's overdone, and it's not great in comparison with the content of the film. In the first Last House, there's Mary has like no agency, and, like, Phyllis is the one with, like, any sort of presence of mind. And in this one, they did away with that. Now it's Mary is the one that has, like, she knows what's up. She's got agency. She's, like, more able to get away. She's like, I'll just make it all the way to the rocking chairs, I will. And instead of Phyllis, we get Paige. And Paige is just an idiot. She's like the trashy girl that gets her good, upstanding friend in trouble. She has no sense. And also, I think she just left the gas station in the middle of her shift to go smoke weed at a desert hotel.
That's a good point. What the hell was that about?
Yeah.
She's pretty much an afterthought, too. When the movie's over, it's like the family just rides off into the sunset. Nobody even mentions Paige. It's like, yeah, fuck Paige. Who cares?
Yeah. Yeah, we just got this new son, officer. He's our new son. This is Justin. No, I don't know what that weird residue all over the inside of the garage is.
Is he a bad person? No, he's not a bad person. He really enjoys chocolate milk.
Yeah, yeah, he's just empty on the inside.
Why are his eyes dead? I don't know.
It's just because no one is at home.
That kid has the weirdest look on his face. Like, he just looks dead. He is. I'm surprised they haven't seen more of him, because he kind of looks like that. There's a couple actors that you see in Hollywood films that whenever they need someone that's weird, they hire that guy. This dude could have filled in. Of course, they probably doesn't, because he can't.
That is Spencer Treat Clark. His middle name is Treat, or perhaps his first last name is Treat. I don't know. But he was in Weird, the Al Yankovic story. And, I watched that yesterday and I was like, oh, look, it's Justin.
It's Treat.
What a treat. There he is.
This movie, you get the feeling that Dennis Iliadis, or whatever his name is, that he may well have not even seen, he may not even have been aware of the Virgin Spring, for all I know. I mean, there's none of that in this movie. This movie is a straight retake of Wes Craven's film, period. It has nothing to do with, I mean, like, Wes Craven, we know, you know, was inspired by the Virgin Spring, obviously, even though it's very much a different film. Like, it took all the stupid and the most base elements and turned it into a schlock film. But that's where the connection ends, because this movie is just a straight rip on... It's not a rip. I mean, it's obviously meant as a tribute, but it's a straight rip on Craven's movie, which is a piece of shit and should never have been revisited.
Yeah. It even, this one left off the writing credit for The Virgin Spring. It just, you know, like, lists the people that wrote the original as writing credits. So it's just like, yeah, none of that, all this. I looked on the Wikipedia page, it talked about how he, like, oh, Mr. Craven, do you mind if I make changes to the way your film goes? Oh, and Wes Craven was like, yeah, I don't give a shit. Do whatever you want. And so... Yeah.
Go ahead. I'm trying to forget I made it.
It's like, yeah, I really am not digging all of these new Quentin Tarantino films, so you just do whatever you want.
The world has become much, much too extreme since the since the simpler days of The Last House on the Left.
Yeah, since your 1973s of yore.
Dick.
So out of the three, what are, like, we should talk about the three in concert with one another, like, impressions of this movement of films as a thing and such forth. The one note that I wanted to bring up is I thought it was weird. It's not this movie, it's Wes Craven's. He split the character Ingery into two. So in The Virgin Spring, we have Ingery. And then in Last House, we get Phyllis and Sadie. So they're playing these separate elements of Ingery's role. And it's an interesting choice. And ultimately, I think it's a shitty choice. I liked Ingery's character better than the split Phyllis-Sadie.
Ingery is a much better character. Her moral quandary, her bizarre connection to Thor and to the, you know, the spiritual world is a very important element in the Virgin Spring. In Craven's movie, it's absolutely irrelevant. It's not even part of the film in any way. And then, as you say, he goes ahead and splits Ingrid up into two characters that we don't need, really. They're not important. I mean, how, you know, the whole thrust, hello, of the first movie is you know, this character who is a symbol for different things beyond just being the daughter of this semi-wealthy guy. She's supposed to endure this whole nightmare by herself. That's the whole point. Like, you know, and then to have her have a cohort as a plot device when the plot is already there, dude. Like, if you love the first movie so much, use its plot a little bit more. Don't inject some piece of shit 70s idea. And then Dennis Iliadis comes along and is like, that movie was so good that I think I should basically make the same movie but take any signs of life out of it.
yeah.
What a weird trajectory to go from 1960, I believe it was 1960, right, to 2009.
Something like that.
I mean, that's a, Jesus Christ, in 50 years, essentially, that's where movies have come. Like, yeah. You know, an honest, deep, emotionally, tormented examination of spirituality and misogyny and class and all these different things. And let's just turn it into schlock. It took us 50 years to work that out.
If there's anything that Wes Craven has taught us, it's that the bourgeoisie are the good guys.
Yes, exactly. Whee! What I find really shocking is that aside from a movie called Hardcore, which he made before this, and a movie called Delirium that he also made, this dude really hasn't made much of anything. I don't know why. I mean, he's so on it. I mean, I know he's got a couple projects in pre or post production or something. I think they're feature films. I don't know. I won't be watching them, so I don't really care. But yeah, fuck you, dude.
I like that one of the movies he directed, he didn't even put his name on. I suppose it's because it was beneath him.
did he Alan Smithy it?
It was something worse. It was like Blythe Giggles or, you know, something stupid like that.
Blythe Giggles. Wee! Oh, man. Yeah. I was thinking about the whole threequel thing, and I think next year we should stick to just a remake. Like, a movie and a remake, maybe. Maybe we should consider
instead
that.
Instead of three?
Yeah, because we're running out of options, for one thing. And that opens it up quite a bit for us, and it doesn't tie down an entire fucking month.
That's true. This was too much. I agree. Like, this would have been good to do, like, the Virgin Spring and then the Last House on the Left and then just breeze right past this one.
That's true. Apparently isn't there another movie that was riffing on this, but it was called Chaos or something like that? Did you read about that? There was another take on Last House on the Left, I think, that predates this one. It might have been 2005, called Chaos, which apparently...
Oh, it sounds...
So, you know, I don't know.
That sounds like our next episode right there.
let's stretch this baby out.
Let's go, and then we're going to do all the Saw movies.
All 14 of them.
Starting with Saw 6.
And we're going to jump around out of order.
Yeah, we're going to start in the middle and then do a spiral away from the middle.
Ooh! Oh my God. Wow. Oh, wow. Yeah. We're really stupid.
It's such a good program to tune into. I don't know that we chose right on this three-peat. I don't feel good about it. It was interesting. It was a neat deep dive to go down. But if I could go back and choose, like, Evil Dead, I definitely would have gone with Evil Dead instead.
Yeah. I mean, if I had never gotten around to seeing The Virgin Spring, so this was the only reason I ended up seeing it in my life, then it was worth it for that, I guess. I did always want to maybe get around to Craven's film. I don't give two shits about this one. Even though I rated it higher, that's basically just on a scale. It's not worth seeing. I mean, I don't really think Craven's is either, but at least it has historical merit, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, wow, brutal. Yeah.
Yeah.
In all the wrong ways.
Yeah. And Virgin Spring was good, but it wasn't even like...
wasn't even a horror movie.
Yeah, and it wasn't even like a top Bergman for me. Like, you know, like it was good, but I would like, if I was like, hey, let's watch an Ingmar Bergman movie, I wouldn't go with that one ever.
True. No, that's true. He does heavy very well, but that movie is heavy in a way that doesn't, it's like, it's too much. Like, it's a little bit preachy, which I, you know, I'm not a fan of. Right. And he's a little bit more morally ambiguous with elements of some of his other films, which is part of what makes them so interesting. Don't get me wrong. Virgin Spring's a great film. But yeah, you're right. I mean, it's not, if I was going to pick one, like, let's do Bergman next, that would not be where I'd go.
No. So speaking of doing and next, John, what are we doing next? I don't know what it is. I hope it's good and you're smiling. You look happy. So I think it's going to be a good one. What's it going to be?
I've been up in the air. I've got two different ones that I was going to choose from. I've already made my decision though. The one that I did not choose a little Italian film that was intended to be part three of a series called Demon. The Demon movies. Demons movies or whatever. The first two movies are great. They're complete schlock. The third one was called The Church. Was produced by Dario Argento. His daughter is in it. Being treated creepily as usual. It's a very strange movie. It is fun. It didn't suit, like, for me, it just didn't seem like a good next. So I'm going to go ahead and go with Satanic Hispanics.
Oh, yeah! Let's go!
a Hispanic-themed horror comedy anthology with a tied together plot with starring, I think it's the, what is his name? Pedro from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh, no!
he's hilarious in it, but it's really good. I mean, it's got some interesting little segments in it. It's actually pretty funny, and it's gory as hell. It was a lot of fun. I don't like saying it's a lot of fun. Every time I hear that on the show, it makes my skin crawl. But it was a lot of fun. It's good.
Is that the one like Demian Rugna directed or like has a part in?
Yeah, I think he might have done. If I remember correctly, he did one of the short. One of the segments in it. There's like four or five little mini segments inside of it.
Okay, so it's got kind of like a VHS, like, the little anthology. Nice. Very cool.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah. Is this the first time we're doing an anthology film?
I think it might be, actually.
Oh, fuck yes. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, because we did Masters of Horror, which is an anthology series, but each episode is a different entry, and we just did the Carpenter one, and that was enough. Some of those are actually really good. The Takashi Miike one is fucking amazing. It's nice. So strange. But yeah, Cigarette Burns was not great. But we went ahead and did a whole episode on it.
Yeah, we did.
Satanic Hispanics, you should go watch, guys, before we do this next episode, because it's pretty funny, and it's more in line with Loathsome Things protocol, nice. I guess. I don't know what the fuck I'm saying. Yeah,
that's good.
It's great.
Yeah. That's the brand.
Yeah. Ron Brand.
Yeah. Ron Brand.
Yeah. Oh my God. So speaking of horror movies, what media did you consume that you might be willing to share with our four members in the audience?
I don't remember when it was, but a while back I mentioned Fifth Thoracic Vertebrae. A movie about a mattress that grows a mold being inside of it until it gives birth. I watched that. It's kind of boring. It's Yeah, it's like Deathbed meets Rubber meets the Flying Karakuras, and it's a movie about love and loneliness.
Oh, weird. What a what a blown wad. I don't know. That seems like a good idea, or not a good idea, but I mean, a funny premise anyway, from the just from the title alone. But yeah, that doesn't sound very good.
It's worth seeing if you're bored. It's like, oh, neat. But, like, don't expect any goodness. There's not much goodness there. It's, like, there's no awesome special effects. That's a big letdown because, like, the cover is, like, a moldy mattress with an eyeball sticking out of it. And you're like, oh, cool. There's going to be, like, an awesome moldy mattress monster. And, spoiler alert, it's just some chick pops out of there. It's just a little slimy.
Such promise.
But there is a really great scene where you're looking at a, like, field of tall grass, and then you see a mattress walking through the tall grass, and that's the only time the mattress does anything like that.
So stupid.
Yeah. So.
Wow.
What about Yon Self, John?
Yeah, well, I watched the Church and Satanic Hispanics. The Church I enjoyed. It's not great, but it's one of those movies that would be fun to talk about. It's an Italian horror film from the 80s or late 70s, so figure it out. You know it's a piece of shit, but...
is the second one the one where they're in a movie theater that gets attacked by demons? Fuck yeah, that movie kicks ass.
I know, it's so good. And apparently this guy, like, I don't know, his name's like Rico Suave or something, the guy that made this one. he was like... Yeah, I don't want it to be all silly like those. I want it to be taken more seriously. And I'm like, dude, you're a fucking moron. No. That's what this movie lacks is a sense of humor. Because otherwise it would be, if it had a sense of humor, it would be genius. I watched History of Evil, which I had read good things about, I thought. I don't know where I read them because I went back and looked for it afterwards. I was so mad. The movie sucked. Yeah. It was like, it's like, what if Handmaid's Tale met high school theater and all went down in a hideaway house that was haunted for no reason. Like, it just, it was like, what the fuck am I watching? Like, the United States has been taken over by a group called J6, and it's now the American Federation, and they bust out this freedom fighter, and she goes into a hideaway house, and the lady that hides them away is like, well, we'll be safe here because everyone's scared of this house. They say it's haunted. And I'm just like, oh, are you shitting me? Is that where we're going? And that's where we're going. And it's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
It was terrible. Shudder, they need to stop because that was not a good movie.
Is that the one where it turns out that they have a cellar and the cellar is like full of like KKK memorabilia?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I saw that one.
Like, there's a husband, and the wife is the freedom fighter, and then there's the daughter, and then there's their minder, like this lady that's with them. And like at one point, of course, the husband starts getting influenced by the evil. And
yeah, that sucked so much.
He starts seeing, like, meeting with some ghostly right-wing landowner with a large lazy boy chair and good booze, like, and then he decides he's gonna kill. It's just terrible. It was so that movie sucked.
That movie sucked a lot, and it's just because everyone's excited for Civil War. It's gonna be awesome, and so they're, you know, you've got to come up with the knockoff movies, and that's just Civil War the knockoff movie. That movie blew big hard chunks. And you were talking about this one that we just watched having that like Lifetime feel. That movie was like
big
cheapo
time.
Lifetime lighting, just like, what if
terrible. The performances were terrible. The woman that plays the, you know, the head of the rebellion or whatever has no personality.
Yeah.
But like, this, you're hanging your hat on this bucket of shit, like, you guys are fucked. It was real bad.
There's all kind of nonsense with their fucking, like, walkie-talkie satellite box, and it's stupid, and it's the worst.
Everything that happens in that movie was stolen from something else and done better in that something else. So, you know, it was like the sum was worse than, you know, than its parts. I mean, it was The parts were okay. They took some interesting elements, but they went nowhere with it. Like, you're going to make a supernatural thriller about evil, and you're going to have this weird, like, ultra-right-wing thing to it, which sounded like a kind of a cool idea. I mean, Kevin Smith did a pretty good job with it in Red State. You know, I mean, Red State was surprisingly good. This movie sucked. I mean, it was just trash. It was like, okay, it was like a student movie. Like, if your friends made it, you'd be like, that's not bad for a first movie. You think I should pitch it to festivals and stuff? Oh, no. But I mean, like, as a first project, it's good.
Yeah.
It's that kind of a movie.
Yeah. You know, I heard Shudder fired all of the people in charge of curation. Do you think they would make it a Shudder original? Yeah, maybe. Why don't you go ahead?
Sure. They've got an extra $10 laying around. Fucking.
They don't care anymore.
No shit.
Fuck.
So there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, that's a lesson to all you out there. If you're a white guy, maybe the spirit of your ancestors will appear to you and turn you into a bucket of shit.
Correct.
Yeah. Okay, so go out there, watch, what is it? Satanic Hispanics.
Satanic Hispanics. Meet us again and on the webs of tubes. In 2 weeks, where we'll discuss Satanic Hispanics. I'm sorry that you may have watched those three movies, or at least the last two. And I'm also sorry that you all have to die.